a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The South Dakota Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. I would request everyone with cell phones to please either turn them off or put them on vibrate, and we'll have the secretary call the roll.
Senators Krebs, Lucas,
here.
Monroe,
here.
Amdahl,
here.
Otten,
here.
Ewing,
here.
Valley,
here. We have a quorum. The minutes have been provided either in your black folders or on the internet. The chair would entertain a motion on those minutes. Been moved by Senator Monroe, seconded by Senator Amdahl to approve the minutes. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. On behalf of the chair, I want to welcome everyone here to the committee meeting this morning and to those folks that are listening to us via the internet. We have only two bills up today. The only thing different in today's schedule will be after the first bill, I will turn the gavel over to the vice chair because I am the sponsor of the second bill. And we may have a third bill that we may handle, I was just told, that we did. It's a fourth bill of the driving task force, and if they get that done in time, we may want to they may come to us with that bill, and we would put it in and drop it in like we did before with the other three. And just to remind you, that's no reflection on whether you're for or against it. It just gives them the opportunity to have that bill be considered by this or whatever committee the President Pro Tem decides to send that bill to. Kind of like just, it, in fact, it's just like the agency bills we've had before. With that, the who's our page today? Would you step up to the mic there and tell us who you are and what you plan on doing with your life here maybe in 4 or 5 years?
Good morning. I'm Rob Foyles. My hometown is Brookings, South Dakota. My future plans is go to college somewhere and then go and be a farmer.
All right. That's what we need. Are you coming back to South Dakota to be that farmer?
Yes, sir.
All right. That's what we like. Thank you. If you have handouts today, be sure and give them to the page and let the page distribute them and distribute them behind us here so we aren't in front of the people that are testifying. If you are going to testify, please remember to sign in at the podium so that the secretary can get your name right. You know, sometimes when we get up there, we had this happen in Ag yesterday. The person testified twice, and Senator Rode and I looked at each other, and we still couldn't understand what his name was. So, you know, sometimes people say, "Man, Bill Jones?" That was Bill Jones, but you might not be able to pick that up. So the secretary needs that for her records. With that, unless the committee has anything else, we will go into the first bill that's on the docket. It's Senate Bill 53, and that is to expand the application of the farm decal system. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deborah Hilmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. I'm kind of at a loss because I haven't been in front of the committee very much this year. This, I think, is only the second time. So they've kind of spread my bills over other committees. I don't know if they just wanted to give me more exposure or what. But
I think that's what it is. You do such a good job. They wanted to show the rest of the committees what a good job
they do.
How to testify, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an act to expand the application of our farm decal system. And to just give you a little bit of history, the passage of federal legislation, which is referred to as Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century, which we refer to as MAP 21, there were provisions in that MAP 21 that exempted certain licensees from the federal requirements, from some of the federal requirements, such as CDL, no medical cards, hours of service, and inspections for repair and maintenance. However, in order to be exempt, the federal government requires that the vehicle must be equipped with either a special license plate or other designation by the state in which the vehicle is registered to allow for identification. South Dakota currently already has a farm decal system that is provided only currently to straight trucks with two or three axles or truck tractors. And this allows those designated vehicles to travel within those free zones. We have agreements with Nebraska, Minnesota, North Dakota, and we have like about a 20-mile free zone around the state. And it, with this farm decal on those straight trucks and two and three axles, they were allowed to go into those other states and conduct business in those areas and not be subject to maybe some of their state requirements. This legislation merely expands the vehicle types to any vehicle designated as a farm vehicle by the farmer. This bill is necessary for South Dakota's agricultural producers to be exempt from many federal regulations when they travel outside of South Dakota. These exemptions are eligible for vehicles and drivers nationwide if under 26,000 pounds gross vehicle weight rating and 150-mile radius of the farm if over 26,000 gross vehicle weight rating, regardless of the state boundaries. For example, a one-ton pickup with a horse trailer over 10,000 gross vehicle weight rating would be subject to federal motor carrier rules if traveling across state lines. With the farm decal, most of those regulations would not apply. This must be operated by the farmer, employee, or family in order to qualify for the exemption. If hazmat is being hauled, those exemptions are lost. This is the method for other states. The farm decal is actually a method for the other states to identify the vehicles as operators of the farm vehicle. Only identifiable farm vehicles are eligible for certain exemptions from these federal regulations. Without this designation on the vehicle, those drivers and vehicles would be placed out of service in another state until those regulations are complied with, and operators could be subject to fines and citations. Ag producers coming into South Dakota from other states will be required to have a designator on their vehicle to be eligible for the exemptions as well. So we would ask for your support in this. And if you want to get into the nitty-gritty of some of this, I'm going to refer to Captain Boers, because he's the one that does the enforcement. I just get to do the administrative part of issuing the decals. So I will let him speak to some of the enforcement side of this, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I'm going to, as a chair, I'm just going to have one question here we'll bring back. But economically, does this affect the state so far as I'm buying a different license or whatever? Is this going to affect revenue in any way?
Mr. Chairman, no, absolutely not. This is a free decal that we give them. They still have to pay their plate fees based on the weight on our fee schedule for non-commercial gross. So it does not affect the license fees at all. It's just a designator that will be placed on the license plate to indicate it's a farm vehicle. Some states issue farm plates. We in South Dakota do not do that, so the farm decal is the designation, and we have worked that out with Federal Motor Carrier, and they said that's fine as long as it's designated as farm. So,
okay. Please don't go too far.
I won't.
Further proponents of Senate Bill 53. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is John Broers. I'm a commander for the Motor Carrier Division of the South Dakota Highway Patrol and their Department of Public Safety. MAP 21 was passed this summer, signed into law in July. All of these provisions are going to be codified into the federal regulations. They aren't as of this time. Right now, the governor has issued an executive order for us to allow the exemptions that are listed here in MAP 21 as they apply to the federal motor carrier rules and agriculture at this time. Next year, we'll hopefully be in front of you adopting these as South Dakota law instead of operating under the executive order. But with this bill this morning, the farm stickers right now, they were established several years ago, so neighboring states could identify our vehicle as a farm vehicle. The only real use for it currently is for Nebraska, for agricultural exemption for CDLs in Nebraska. So by and large, agricultural producers across the state aren't using the farm sticker, but now they're going to be much more motivated to do so. Ms. Hilmer did a very good job and took much of the wind out of my sails this morning on explaining these to you. But the handouts you have in front of you, there's two different areas that apply to ag and agricultural businesses. The top portion, that's more for the elevators, seed companies, things like that. The ones that the average farmer is going to want to use are from about mid-page down. And the most important part of having this recognized across state lines is the identification of the farm vehicle. It's in the PowerPoint-type presentation that was handed out to you. They talk about a qualified farm vehicle. Well, we have to, as they allow the states to designate that however they wish to, by either a farm plate, a sticker, a notation on the registration, things like that. Right now, as Ms. Homer said, if you're over 10,000 pounds and you cross state lines, all the federal rules still apply to you. So an agricultural producer that wants to do business across those lines, they have to have a DOT number, annual inspections, a CDL if it applies, logbooks, medical cards, things like that. What this MAP 21 does is it relieves them of most of those regulations. They're now exempt from CDL requirements, the company's drug and alcohol testing program. That's nothing we check roadside, but on a compliance review or an audit from the federal motor carriers, they would make sure that that company has a testing program. Relieves them of the medical card requirements, the hours of service rules, and the, what's referred to as an annual inspection or DOT inspection. It requires them to have an inspection done annually of their vehicle and equipment to hopefully find any defects. They still have to have a DOT number. They still have to be 21 years old across state lines and speak English. So as the example that Ms. Hilmer used, if I'm a farmer and I raise some registered Angus, let's say, and I want to take him to the stock show in Denver and I'm from Kadoka. Right now, if I load him up in my 3/4 or 1-ton pickup in a small horse trailer and go to Denver, I have to have all of these things. Even though that might be the only trip that year that I make across state lines in my business, I have to have all these regulations in order to be legal. I'm under over 10,000 pounds gross vehicle weight rating, but I'm under 26. The provisions of MAP 21 allow that type of person to go across the United States without having to comply with those parts of the federal regulations. If I'm over 26, such as in a semi-truck in a trailer, I get a 150-mile radius from the farm, and that's regardless of state line. It doesn't give me 150 miles from the border. It gives me 150 miles from the farm. So the producer in North Dakota that wants to come into Aberdeen, or the producer in Elk Point that wants to sell grain in Sioux City, Iowa, they now can run under these exemptions. But if I have that semi-truck, I can't go from Pier and go to Georgia to sell some grain. Not that that would be real cost-effective, but or show some cattle, things like that. These will be codified, hopefully, in the federal system throughout this year. And then we'll look at the federal motor carrier adoption rules next year when we look at those to see if we want to adopt those as well. That's how they apply as we're talking about the farm sticker here today. And I'd be happy to stand by for any questions that you may have.
Thank you. We'll see if we got any other proponents, and then we'll come back for questions here. Other proponents of Senate Bill 53.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brenda Foreman. I'm registered lobbyist for South Dakota Wheat, Inc., which is the producer organization for wheat producers in the state of South Dakota. The previous two testifiers have gone through, I guess, what I would call the real details of what Senate Bill 53 does. But from an agricultural standpoint, as we become more mobile, as you look at those farms and ranches that are on the border and work on both sides of the state lines, having the ability to make sure that we are exempt from these and clearly exempt and meet all federal regulations is very important. So we would support passage of Senate Bill 53 and stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 53.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mike Held, South Dakota Farm Bureau. We have members that live in every county in the state, about 13,000 families. Obviously, transportation is a key part of today's farming and ranching industry and very, very key in being able to be successful in the business. I believe that both Ms. Hilmer and Captain Blore have done a very good job of outlining the necessity of Senate Bill 53, so I'll just say that we support the bill and encourage your passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 53? Further proponents? Any further proponents? All right. We will move to questions on the proponents. Are there any questions here for the pardon? Well, no, I'm going to go. We'll just ask for proponents first. Are there any questions? Senator Lucas.
Hours. Are the vehicles with the farm decals treated any differently at the weigh stations? And obviously the highway patrolman can see then this is a farm vehicle, so they don't have to ask for the logs, but otherwise they would still be tested on the scales, correct?
Mr. Chairman. Yes, nothing in these provisions exempt agricultural from weight or any of the other state regulations. It's just the federal motor carrier regulations that they would be exempt from.
Further questions? Senator Monroe.
John, thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, this looks like it might be just a weight-based practicality type thing where they know the guy's not going to get in trouble and it's not going to wreck the roads. Is that what this is about?
Mr. Chairman. The weight provisions that are in here is this just how we're separating vehicles into classes of vehicles. We know if you have a vehicle that's a gross vehicle weight rating of 5,000 pounds, you're not making a lot of impact on the road. I mean, that's a Pontiac Grand Am, that's a little Chevy Love pickup. You're not likely to be doing a lot of commercial operations that's regulated either by state or federal law, nor are you hauling a lot of weight that's going to have that impact on the road. So the weights in here are more to classify the size of the vehicle versus the industry that we're working with. Did that answer your question?
I think so.
Okay. Further questions? All right. Thank you. Please don't go further. We'll ask if there are any further questions after we go through opponents here. Are there any opponents of Senate Bill 53? Opponents. Nice bow tie.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Myron Rao, President Registered Lobbyist for the South Dakota Trucking Association. I came from a farm background, so this testimony is a bit difficult for me. And I agree and I disagree with the proponents. And so I'm here to really tell you a little of history and why we are where we are, and I want you to understand exactly what you're doing here today. You got to go back to 1994. When I was in Captain Brewer's position, and we were trying to adopt the federal code. I ate that bill that year because I didn't have a farm exemption. We adopted those regulations. We were the last state in the country to adopt federal regulations. And what that did is it put the blanket over us that, you know, when somebody's operating within the borders or outside the borders, they're all playing by the same rules. Well, a lot of legislators, whether they felt sorry for me or whatever it may be, maybe they liked me, and I didn't wear a bow tie in those days. They said, if you put a farm exemption in this, we'd love to do this, but you got to come back with an ag exemption, and we will pass this. Well, I did a lot of thinking about that in the next 12 months. I don't like farm exemptions. I don't think they should be treated differently when it comes to safety. And that's what we're talking about here. That number, that it's safety we're talking about, not weight. That's only a classification of the vehicle. The next year I came back with, and we're going to be talking about the next bill, which you'll hear this story again in a little bit. I came back with a class exemption. In other words, three axle vehicles. And that's still in the law today. It's known as the Myron Rao exemption. We got it through that way because we created a class, so a three-axle garbage truck, a three-axle farm truck, a three-axle truck, period, was exempt from federal regulations. My testimony at that time was we should not have to look at the license plate to see if it's commercial or non-commercial to decide if it's safe. We're going back to that same area with this bill, and I know we're probably going to pass it. That's not the point. I want you to understand that we're now going to exempt a group of vehicles, so we now have to look for that little decal when we meet this guy to make sure he's safe or he's not safe. All other commercial vehicles, whether it's a contractor or whoever it is, in that same classification, has to play by the rules. They have to be inspected. It's not all that burdensome. They have to get a CDL. it takes them to another level. So I just want the committee to understand what we're doing. This is another congressional thing that comes down. They don't let the states make their own decisions. This is a federal thing. I'm not anti-agriculture. Like I said, that's where I came from. But from the perspective of the Trekking Association, we just want this, the committee to understand what this really is. And it is an exemption from safety within those boundaries. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. Further proponents of Senate Bill 53. What did I say? Proponents? Further opponents of Senate Bill 53. Further opponents. Last call for opponents. Okay, let's have questions for opponents. You want to rebut? Okay. Questions for opponents. Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for muddy in the water, Myron.
pleasure.
these, the way I'm looking at this, these are just some minor changes to what's already been in effect, correct? I mean, a lot of this, the farmers and ranchers have been able to go within 100 miles prior to this, correct? And now it's expanding that to 150 miles, or if you're in a vehicle that is in the right weight limit, you can do, as the captain said, you could go from here to the stock show.
But they were never, Mr. Chairman, Myron Rao, South Car Trucking again. They were not exempt from safety. Only by doing this and applying that decal will they be exempt from safety. 10,001 pounds, according to federal law, gross vehicle weight rating or actual, puts you into that category. This is taking them out. There's some mileage things that, and Captain Burrows is correct, there's some mileage things in there, but that's what's in Map 21. That's why they're putting those circles around the 150 and the 100 and so on and so forth. But today, if you trip that 10,000 pound, in other words, 10,001 or greater, you have to comply with those federal regulations, in-state or out-of-state. So we're changing the rules.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Further questions? I have one. I marked it down. I have one for Captain Brewers. And that is why we're operating under executive order rather than the law. And is that because they haven't written the rules to this yet? So we're just going by executive order on this? I'm just wondering why we're waiting another year.
Yes, sir. The federal legislation, Map 21, basically directed the federal motor carrier to make this happen, for the lack of better terms. They have to get that codified into the federal regulations, because when we adopt the federal motor carrier regulations, we say we're adopting, South Dakota is going to adopt the federal regulations from here to here. And they don't have them between here and here yet. They just have them kind of out here on the side. The federal motor carrier guys, they're already going forth with the Map 21, because in theory, it's federal law now. They just don't have it in a form that South Dakota adopts yet.
And since this was a year and a half bill, by about the time that we would make it legal, because if we do it next year, it wouldn't go into effect unless we do it by emergency order until June 30, and that one expires, I think, in 2014 in September. So that one will be officially in for about 4 months, unless they have another extension.
Unless they, Mr. Chairman, unless they continue it or administrative change changes that, yes.
Okay. Senator Lucas.
I'll ask another one there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have any history then of any safety defects on any of these farm-to-market vehicles? Because that's what I see that they are. Are they at a higher incidence than commercial vehicles?
Mr. Chairman, Currently, the people, and I'll say the people as in agricultural, there's a thresholds that they have to meet and whether or not they're under the federal regulations. If you're over 10,000 pounds gross vehicle weight rating, which anymore is a one-ton pickup by itself or three-quarter half-ton pickup with a trailer, and you cross state lines, you're under these federal rules, which means you have to have the inspection. You have to have CDL wouldn't apply there, but medical cards, hours of service, things like that. For agricultural drivers that are in state, you have to be 26,001 pounds or more and more than three axles. So that takes the farmer out that's driving that one-ton pickup. It takes him out if he's driving the three-axle straight truck. But once he graduates to a semi, which by and large most ag producers nowadays are running semis instead of the smaller trucks, what they would have to do now is they have to comply with the federal motor carriers, the federal motor carrier regulations, even if they stay within the state. But there is in-state and state law exemptions for that. So within 150 miles, they don't have to have a CDL. There's exemptions in the federal regulations for logbooks and things like that. One thing that they do have to have is an annual inspection. They have to cause that inspection to be done and show proof of that inspection. That takes care of a lot of the mechanical things, or in theory it would hopefully identify the serious stuff before it happens. I don't have any statistics today to show you what kind of crashes these vehicles are getting into. Like we'll testify on the next bill, a more qualified driver, a more qualified vehicle equals a safer driver. So do we have concerns? I would say yes.
If I remember correctly, you said they have to be at least 21 years of age, so we're not going to have the 16-year-old farm worker hauling the semi-load into town, correct?
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
You would still have that for intrastate drivers, the ones that never leave South Dakota. So the kid from Harold can still drive his grain into Peary to the elevator here, a 16-year-old. But if he wants to cross those state lines, he's got to be 21 years old.
Senator Armdahl.
Mr. Chairman, I have just one question. You were mentioning doing an inspection, an annual inspection of this equipment. Is this a visual? Is this a documented inspection on these vehicles? Or I guess I'm kind of confused. You had mentioned on the vehicles an annual inspection.
Mr. Chair, there's different programs across the nation on how that inspection's performed. In some states, it's a state-sponsored inspection. State inspectors will inspect that vehicle, put a sticker in the windshield that says it's passed our inspection.
Okay.
The federal motor carrier have requirements for those inspections. In South Dakota, we don't have a state-sponsored inspection program. They have to take that to a commercial garage, or companies, if they qualify, they can have their own personnel inspect those vehicles.
Senator Monroe.
John, I kind of got tweaked by Myra a little bit, but this is just farm vehicles. Why not the person that's driving a trailer load of goods to Sturgis to put up their booth? I mean, it's the same size vehicle, probably the same type of person. I don't know why it's being... Why it's just one segment here, I guess I can understand, but do you have a clue why they just did this instead of just any vehicle like that? I know what they're getting at, the type of vehicle. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. No, I don't have an explanation for that. The federal legislature has decided to exempt this group of individuals from these regulations.
Okay, thank you. There are no further questions. We will close it to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action on Senate Bill 53. Senator Monroe.
I would move do pass.
Been moved by Senator Monroe. Do pass. Is there a second? Senator Otten is a second. Discussion on that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a comment. I think this is a good bill because it takes away a lot of problems I hear about every day. I don't understand why it doesn't just apply to every vehicle of every situation of that type. And I see that for some odd reason that I don't understand, the federal government is being nice to somebody, and I'm just looking for the grenade in here for the down the road. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further comments? Senator Krebs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to reluctantly support this, and obviously, you know, being an agricultural state, that this is an important part of the process here. But the concern, of course, like our good lobbyist from the South Dakota Trucking Association said, is exemption. When you look at the list of exemptions, exempting, you know, these operators, and a lot of your farmers are running large semis, exempting them from a CDL, exempting from drug and alcohol testing, the medical card, hours of service. I mean, no requirement of a PTI or pre-trip inspection before they leave that farm. I mean, that's definitely a safety concern. And the first time that an accident happens with one of these, they're going to look to the trucking industry in general and say that it's their fault and they need to tighten down on the trucking industry. And they'll take the burden for the mistakes that are made on these parties' behalf. And so I understand why, but it's a reluctant, very reluctant yes support for this bill.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I plan to support it, too, and I would contend there's more accidents with our large semis due to driver fatigue and overdriving the weather conditions. And speed. How many times we see the semis flipped over out there on the interstate because they're driving too fast on icy conditions? I don't think it's the farm vehicles that are violating or driving that fast and flipping over. It doesn't seem fair, you know, just because you live next to the state line that you have to go through another hoop if you want to take your product to sale in another state. So I think they have liability. They're not going to risk losing their farm load or a life and being sued because they're putting an inexperienced driver or inexperienced or an unsafe rig on the road.
Thank you. Senator Rondo.
And Mr. Chairman, I think everything comes down to a cost-benefit type situation. You look at the cost to farmers and the benefits, I guess, that it would help them. I do have some reluctance on the safety, as Senator Krebs said. We're not dealing probably with the high, we'll say, speed mass that Senator Lucas talked about. So I guess I'm going to support this.
Thank you. Senator Ewing, you're looking like you may want to say something.
Well, I don't really know where to start. I was going to originally support this, but after sitting here and thinking about everything that's involved in what the trucking industry as a whole has to deal with and all the regulations, and you're still talking, especially when you're talking about a semi, a tractor trailer set up, and I totally agree with supporting the ag aspect of it to getting the products to market. But I really wonder if we're doing the right thing by exempting it from a lot of these requirements that the rest of the world has to put up with. So I'm most likely going to vote against this.
Thank you. If there are no other further comments, the chair will just say this. I have some of the same concerns. I, at this point, though, I think to not pass this would be detrimental to what our farm friends are looking at. I would say that in the future we may want to take a look at this and see if there are some things we may want to work with in this aspect. And so, I agree, we want to keep our roads safe, because in the next bill I'm going to be talking about that myself, about the ability to make sure we have safe vehicles and drivers on the road. So with that, it's been moved and seconded. If there's no further comments, the secretary will please call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay.
Senators Krebs?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Amdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Ewing.
No.
Valley.
Aye.
6-1.
Senate Bill 53 has passed the Transportation Committee with a vote of 6-1, and we'll go to the debate calendar on the floor. With that, I am going to turn the gavel over to Senator Ewing, the Vice Chairman, and I am going to be next, I guess. That's up to the Chair.
Thank you, Senator. We now welcome you to the hillbilly style of government. The next bill here for us to consider today is Senate Bill number 78. And at this time, I would turn the floor over to you, Senator Valley, for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Valley, Senator from District 20. That's Aurora, Girald, and Davison counties. I'm bringing forward to you today Senate Bill 78. Senate Bill 78 does two things, basically, two completely separate things. The first one is a yearly update of Title 49 of the rules, and that also is included in Senate Bill 42, and that's why the chair did not take up Senate Bill 42 yet, because it's incorporated into this bill, and if we can get them into both, take care of both items in one bill, we will do that. So far as speaking to all the fine points of Title 49, I'm going to leave that up to the Department of Public Safety, which Captain Brower will speak to you in a little bit about that. The second part of the bill, though, is what I really want to talk to you today about. It's to allow an option for intrastate motor carriers to require that their drivers be medically certified under Title 49, Part 391.41. That's often referred to, and I'll probably refer to it as a DOT physical or the CDL physical that's required of all interstate motor carriers. And there isn't an exemption in state law for intrastate carriers for that. Now, you might ask, well, why are you here bringing this bill? And why are we wanting to let an employer have the option of saying, yeah, I would like to have my employees, even though we're just traveling within the state, to have a CDL physical? Well, the city of Mitchell has a transit system, just like a lot of other communities have transit systems. And in 2009, the city decided, in order to make their transit system safer, that they were going to require their folks to have a CDL physical. Well, they soon found out that, after a lawsuit, that they couldn't do that because it is exempt under South Dakota law. And they could not require that. And they did it because they figured, you know, they could have, I think they'd have probably been all right. I'm not a lawyer, but if they'd have just had their own physical, they probably could have put that in there. But they required the CDL physical, which is exempt in our law. And the CDL physical is kind of what I would call the gold standard of physicals for people that operate motor carriers. In my district, let's just take my district as an example. In Mitchell, you have several transit buses. Take another community in my district, of Plankinton, and I can't remember now whether they have a transit bus or not, but let's just suppose they do. What I want to do here is, if Mitchell says, you know, we have a lot of drivers, and we just want to make sure that our driving, our riding public is safe, and so we want to require this CDL physical. On the other hand, Plankton may say, you know, we've only got one bus. We don't go out of town. We're just driving right here in town. And Bill, who's been driving it, was a former over-the-road trucker. We don't need to have this CDL physical. So they decide they don't want to. So I'm saying leave it up to the local person to decide whether he wants to require that or not. That's what we're talking about here. And I'll give you an example that kind of is interesting. School buses are required by law, school bus drivers, to have that
CDL DOT physical. Okay? So if you have a kid, in the morning he goes to school and he rides on the school bus, okay? And it's driven by a person that has a CDL physical. Okay? Since you're working, you have your child picked up at the school and take it over to the YMCA. The local transit company picks up your child now, and there may be an agreement. It might be the same bus, but the driver doesn't have to have a CDL or a DOT physical. And that may be fine, but I think that the community should have that ability in this case to make that decision. So that's what I'm requesting you to do. It's a minor change, but it says that the employer can require this physical if they so desire to try and keep their riding public more safe. Now, as we go through this, I'm going to let others give a more detailed explanation. Yvonne Taylor from the Municipal League is going to talk about it from the aspect of the transit companies. Bob Miller from Dakota Mass Transit is going to talk to it about how it affects their business. Myron Rao, who we just talked about earlier from the South Dakota Trucking Association, is going to give you an accurate picture and a better understanding of the history of how this came about, which I wasn't aware of when I first sponsored this bill. So he's going to go through that again. And then Captain Brower is going to talk about that first part of the bill that I talked about, the changing of going from 2012 to 2013, and next year we'll go from 2013 to 2014. We do that every year, and he'll talk about what that Section 49 does. So with that, I would encourage you to pass Senate Bill 78 to give the these employers that option, and I will stand down.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Further proponents for this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. Senator Valley has done an excellent job of explaining this bill. In a nutshell, what the court said is that because you have not required this to be done, it is not allowed to be done. And so we're changing the law, hopefully, to say that it is allowed. It is at the employer's discretion, and so we want to be sure that you know that you are not doing anything that mandates anything. You're just simply allowing the employer to tie to these standards. They are the gold standard. They are the only really nationally recognized. There's training available for these. They're updated regularly, and the physicians are well-trained to do these physicals. And so we're in strong support of this bill. I will also tell you that, yes, this came because of a court case. That court case is all settled out. You're not affecting any existing litigation. The people that were involved have all been handled. And to our knowledge, there's nothing pending out there in this issue. And so we are purely looking forward with this. So we urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Miller, and I represent the Dakota Mass Transit Association. We're the folks that have the little white buses that haul your senior citizens and your kids and your grandkids around the state. In fact, we drove over 7 million miles on South Dakota streets and roads last year, and we hauled over 3 million separate passengers on our buses last year. So our people are on the roads, and they've seen everything. The bill in front of you allows our employers to determine if they want to have their employees have the physical. It's purely, purely permissive. I have the physical form right here, and it's 3 pages, checklist, yes and no, one of which is filled out by the patient himself, the other two by the doctor. So it's not an onerous physical they have to go to, or are we going to spend a huge amount of money on the physicals. But it is permissive. If our companies want to do it, they can. It's a safety issue for us, and we would ask you to please support us in that. Thank you. We are hauling your kids and your grandkids. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Further proponents? We may be on the same page on this one.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Myron Rao, President, Registered Lobbyist for the South Dakota Trucking Association. Sometimes I think I've been around too long, and this is an example. What you did in a past life sometimes comes back, and whether it bites you or whatever, that's where we're at. Again, I'm going to take you back to 1994. just testified on the last bill. We tried to get the adoption, again, last state in the North America, to adopt that federal code into state law. And I ate, like I say, ate the bill, as I said in the last bill. We ate it that year, and again, I was told by senators and representatives to come back with an ag exemption, and they'll pass it the next year. Again, as I said, I didn't and I still don't believe in ag exemptions or special interest legislation, special interest exemptions. So we came back with a three-axle exemption, which still exists in state law. During the conversation that we had during the debate was, what about the drivers that I already have? You're telling me if they have to meet these medical requirements, I'm going to have to get rid of Joe and Chuck and Steve because they've got diabetes or they've got high blood pressure or whatever. That's probably not going to be real popular. And that's where the medical exemption came from. We are within our borders. We had those drivers. We were okay with those drivers. Employers were okay with having those drivers. So we put that exemption in that, again, exists today. Now, we never thought there would be a lawsuit when some employer decides to step outside of that box. Every employer should be allowed to do that. We're totally in support that, you know, if you want to follow state law and grant that exemption, you should be allowed to. And, for instance, I've got trucking companies in Sioux Falls that call me routinely and say, I've got this. Is it true? Can I still keep Steve, Chuck, whatever, employed? I said, yeah, as long as you don't let them drive across state lines anymore, you could keep that person as an employee. If they're an important employee, if you can operate strictly within our borders, you can do that. So I think there's still an application for the exemption, but there's also an application, especially in this instance. And a transit bus, I agree with Mr. Miller. I agree with Yvonne. These people are hauling, doing a service that no one else does. And if you also dig deep into this, school bus drivers have never been exempt. So, again, they're hauling the most precious commodity that the state has, and we encourage that. So we, too, support that, a carve-out, and that was not the intent in 1995. It was the intent to not have to unemploy drivers that have been with us for many, many years. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Captain Brewers with the South Dakota Highway Patrol. I'm the commander for the Motor Carrier Enforcement Division of the Highway Patrol. The handout that you're getting passed out literally has Senate Bill 42 written on the top, which wasn't a typo. It's virtually the same bill, but 78 does the exact same thing. And I thought about reprinting to correct it, but I'm going green this morning, and we left it there. The other part of this bill, beyond the employer's right to require that medical card, is the changes in the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration regulations that have gone into effect since last January 1st of 2012. Some of there's a few minor ones that really don't have much effect or don't have any effect on us because of its cross-border things in other states and with Mexico that really just apply to Texas, Arizona, things like that. The main points for us is the creation of the National Registry of Certified Medical Examiners. What that is it's saying only the people that have been trained to do those DOT physicals should be the ones that are doing them. The Federal Motor Carrier is going to train the physicians, chiropractors, physicians assistants, nurse practitioners across America to do these physicals. Now, we're not teaching a physician how to check your pulse rate or see if you've got high blood pressure. They want to say, this is the requirements, these are the limits that we think that the driver is medically qualified for. So we're not teaching a doctor to be a doctor. They're going to start providing this training and certifying these medical professionals and putting them in a registry. what that's doing is it's requiring the drivers that are required to have that medical card to go to one of those practitioners to receive their medical card. The idea here is to combat the fraudulent medical cards. Maybe somebody that doesn't know all of the details of the DOT medical card examination, just get everybody on the same page. We do have a problem with falsified medical cards or unqualified people doing them, not in South Dakota, but across the nation. My fear with this law was that, or excuse me, this rule change, was that we weren't going to have enough doctors in South Dakota that were going to be willing to take that training and make that certification. I've spoke with a couple of different industries, a physician at Sanford. They're pushing that training very hard to make sure we've got enough medical examiners to do that. My fear was we'd have one in Rapid City, one in Sioux Falls, and that would be about it. The trucker in Pierre would have a hard time getting that medical card, or we'd have a small town doctor that didn't know about the changes. The medical community has been very proactive within themselves to get their doctors on the same page, get them into the training and the certification, so we still have an ample service of that in South Dakota. The rule went into effect this past year, but the medical registry doesn't start until May 21st of 2014. So it gets time for the providers to get trained and certified. The other, I guess, somewhat contentious at times is the distracted driving changes. What the Federal Motor Carrier did is they said, a truck driver, if you're driving this big of a vehicle, in order to be safe, you need to have your hands on the wheel. What they did is they required hands-free communication devices. So if you have a cell phone, there's nothing that says you can't talk on the cell phone. But in order to answer it, dial it, talk, you have to have your hands on the wheel still. So they let you have one touch answer, one touch call. You can have a corded headset. You can have a Bluetooth piece in your ear. You can have the speakerphone up on the visor. But what they don't want is a driver hauling double trailers going down the interstate with one phone here, mind distracted, and the other hand on the wheel, or hopefully not the knee on the wheel. Two-way communication devices are still allowed. You can have the high-band radio or the low-band radio. The push-to-talk Nextel-type phones, those are not allowed because they had to make a definition of a cell phone. So law enforcement and drivers across America, they knew what it was that they could do. They had to define a cell phone. Those Nextel devices are a cell phone, even though they operate just like a push-to-talk radio. But those would be included in the ban where you have to have some other form of communication device that makes that hands-free. There's been changes to the hours of service rules. Some of them went into effect on February 27th of last year. What that did is allowed an operator log in their logbook up to 2 hours at the beginning or the end of their 10-hour rest break, as in the passenger seat of the vehicle. Before, you had to have 10 hours either in the sleeper berth or off duty. Well, they decided they don't have to make somebody lay in a bunk for 10 hours. They can lay in the bunk for 8 hours, then you can log 2 hours sitting in a parked motor vehicle in the passenger seat, or in the occasion of a co-driver situation where you have two people driving at their limits, the other driver can ride for 2 hours in the front passenger seat. Just kind of gave a little more freedom there. It defined egregious for hours of service violations. And this isn't for the South Dakota Highway Patrol. This is for the Federal Motor Carrier Administration. If they check on a company through a what's called a compliance review, they'll go through and they'll look at the violations the company's had over a previous amount of time, look at the drivers, what violations they've had. And if you go for 3 hours more than your driving time in a day, they're calling that egregious. Right now you can drive for 11 hours in a day. So if you go to 14 hours a day routinely, what they did, they called that egregious, and that would bump up any potential penalties that the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration could assess onto a company for disregarding the hours of service rules. It also clarified how the logbook waiting time is recorded in the logbook for oil field and oil field exemption. It doesn't apply a whole lot in South Dakota for South Dakota drivers, but we have obviously a lot of traffic going up to the northwest. They have an exemption in there on how they log it. And this one didn't change the exemption. It just literally modified how they write that down in their book for enforcement to when they look at those when they look at that logbook to see how that driver spent his time. The next part of the rule goes into effect on July 1st of 2013. This is to ensure that drivers had enough time to obtain adequate rest on a daily and weekly basis. What this is there's two parts. The first one requires a 30-minute rest break within the first 8 hours of driving a commercial motor vehicle. I think this will be real easy for the drivers to do. Most everybody's got to stop and take a break. They got to get some lunch, get some dinner, things like that. So 30-minute break isn't much. And 8 hours straight of driving, I'm sure some of us have done that in this room. And if you go for 8 hours, you need to stop and take a break, stretch your legs, things like that. The other one, it modified how a 34-hour restart can be taken. A driver, depending on how they run their operation, can drive about 70 hours in a week. That's where the limit would be. After that, you have to have what's called a 34-hour restart. You got to take a break. You can't run every day, all day, and not get run down and tired. The 34-hour restart just said any time you have 34 consecutive hours of off-duty, you can start that 70-hour clock again. What this did is the research shows that, and I'm going to mispronounce this word terribly, but your circadian clock in your head, the one that knows when it's daylight and when it's the one that says when the sun goes down you get sleepy and when the sun comes up you start to wake up. It needs that rest period at night, because 99% of America, we work during the day, we sleep at night. Now there is some folks that do the opposite of that, but for your body to get the best rest you can, they said that 34-hour restart must have two periods in that 34 hours from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Just switch that, so hopefully your body's getting that better rest. I encourage you to pass Senate Bill 78, because what it's going to do is it's going to avoid the checkerboards across different states. The drivers that are driving from Seattle to Miami, they need to have a basis of rules that are the same all the way across. We don't want to make something that's illegal or in South Dakota and legal in Iowa and vice versa. So in Iowa, if you take your 2 hours sitting in the passenger seat of a parked commercial motor vehicle, then you drive through South Dakota, you shouldn't need to get a ticket for that. What we want to do is we want to adopt these so everybody's playing by the same rules and we have the safest drivers and vehicles that can be on the road. Thank you, and I'll be happy to stand by if you have any questions.
Thank you. Any further testimony in favor of Senate Bill 78? If not, we'll open it up for any opponents to the bill. None? We'll close the discussion on the floor and turn it over to the committee for questions. Senator Romdahl.
I've got a question to Captain Rohr there. On the medical, you're saying trained and certified providers. You mentioned a list in there, and you say nurses and people will be providing these. I guess I'm kind of confused, because when you talk medical, I think of a doctor, and a doctor has skills that a nurse or we don't have. I mean, catching a heart murmur or whatever, that could be a potential thing. And so, I guess, getting to my point, I'm wondering what kind of training? I mean, you're not trained as a doctor. How do you certify them? I guess that's my question.
Mr. Chairman, we got stuck on nurse, but it's nurse practitioners, chiropractors, nurse anesthetist, but that's a whole different specialty there. Physician's assistant, thank you. Medical doctors, MDs, DOs. What they've said is those types of medical professionals have the training and the skills necessary to perform these physicals. When these guys go in, what we're looking for, and I'm going to be very layman term, I guess, because I'm not sure. I'm not a medical professional, but we want to make sure that this person has the skills and they don't have any conditions that would prevent them from operating that vehicle safely. We're not doing brain scans. We're not worried about stubbed toes. We want to make sure you got all your fingers and all your hands. And if you don't, there's provisions for that as well. But we're screening you for those things that will make you pass out. retire too quickly, too easily, and the standards that have been set, and they say that group of professionals are able to identify those. We have a registered nurse or a nurse, an LPN license. I forget my abbreviations there, but RNs, LPNs are not included in that list. The ones that have gone to that advanced training are the ones that are included there.
Just do a follow-up. I still have a problem. I mean, you look at a driver driving down the road, and I would expect the medical professional to check like a heart murmur or something. You may have a problem with a heart attack or something along that line. So I guess I'm just a little concerned about who's certifying these drivers if they're not a medical doctor. I guess that's something I have some concerns on that. I'm just wondering why the list is so long, and you don't just say medical doctor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Omdahl, I'm just not good enough in my medical knowledge to explain that more. I would be happy to provide you with the information that says this is the list of of the folks that are allowed to do these medical examinations, and that could either belay your concerns or make them greater.
Okay. Senator Monroe, would you like to speak to this?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Omdahl, the people that give these exams, they've usually had pretty high-level training in all your anatomy, physiology. They've been trained in the heart. They've been trained in the brain. If you look at the nurse practitioners, they're good. They're qualified to give these exams. If you're talking about people that haven't been trained in all the aspects, all the systems, those people are actually excluded from this. The ones that have been trained in all the systems, a nurse practitioner can go out and do basically anything a general practitioner can do out in an area of South Dakota if there's no general practitioners around. I mean, they can do the drug thing and the referral thing, and they're good. They're good at diagnosis, and so are we, by the way. Because I give these exams, and the exam itself isn't this detailed exam where you have to find everything that's possibly wrong with this person, but it does go through. You have to do the Snell and eye chart. You have to find out what their vision is with and without glasses. And when they come into mine, I make sure that if they have glasses on, you have to ask them, do you drive all the time with glasses on, or do you drive with them on? Sometimes not. You got to know how to check that so they're not going to be crashing. If they have, the heart, you got to get, it's a basic heart exam, the pulse, the pressure, it's a basic exam of all the system. It's not a real detailed exam of all the system. You do your analysis. And these exams aren't the end of the world if they're not as detailed as we might think they should be, because these guys are having to be tested every 3 hours by their company for drugs on the outside. If they wear glasses, they're already under frequent care by an optometrist. If they've got they have to have a big questionnaire filled out that of every problem they've got that you can even imagine, and they're usually under the care, frequent care, yearly during the year by other people for those problems too. It's just basically seeing if they can drive or not, and if they're going to be safe on the road. I've had a few. It's pretty obvious when they walk in, they're not safe, and I don't know if that helps.
Okay.
The people that give the exams can give the exam that they require.
It's the subtleties in medicine, like you say, it's systems. And what's the purpose of an exam if you don't have the best inspector doing the exam? I guess that's it comes down to paperwork that's unnecessary if you don't have, we'll say, somebody that can catch these subtleties. That's the way I think, right or wrong.
Okay. Further questions? Comments? I'll take this opportunity to speak on behalf of it. I've been an individual that has had to carry one of these so-called cards
for quite a few years, and it was a pain in the hind end the first time I had to do it, but after complying with it and taking one every 2 years, it's a fairly thorough examination, and I think if you had a physical problem, it would show up, and somebody would recognize it and bring it to your attention. So I do support 78 in the fact that I think anyone that's transporting people, children, whatever the case may be, should have to go through this system, and it is leaving it up to some local control. So I do support it. Any further comments? Okay, I would entertain a motion on this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Otten.
A do pass on this.
Okay, we have a do pass and a second on Senate Bill number 78. Secretary, call the roll, please.
Comment?
Okay, any further comments?
Now that I'm back on this side, I'll make a comment. I think you understand now why I didn't want to explain the provisions of the first part of this that Captain Brewer explained. I'm glad I left it to him. One of the things that I would say for Senator Omdahl, not only, and I understand you're looking at what the difference between a doctor and a physician assistant. The other thing, though, is these people have to take training in order to specialize training, as I understand it, in order to be able to give this physical. So they not only do they have the medical training, and not obviously as intense as a doctor, but they are then trained in how to do this specific exam. So that may give you some comfort to know that it's just not a nurse practitioner that hasn't looked at this, but they have to go to special training. And I think that was Captain Brewer's concern, was they wouldn't get enough doctors or nurse practitioners or whoever's on that list to sign up for that training and be qualified or be able to sign off. I think that was one of his concerns. So I don't know if that gives you any comfort or not, Senator, but I did want to bring that to your attention.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think the overall intent of this is good, and I just have a concern when we of paperwork we're doing, when we don't do it to the best of our ability, I guess, and that medical thing. But it is not something that is going to cause me to not support this. So thank you.
I guess, if I may, Mr. Chair, I would
turn the gavel back over to you and let you finish out.
I tell you what, the chair is doing just fine. We're going to let him continue right on. I just would urge your support of Senate Bill 78, as I do believe it gives a good option to our employers. Thank you.
Further comments? Okay, if not at this time, please call the roll for Senate Bill number 73. 78. I'm back on the other page.
Senators Krebs?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Omdahl?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Seven ayes.
Okay, it passes, a unanimous pass on Senate Bill 78. I will turn the gavel back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. You did an excellent job. I thank you. I thank the members of the committee. Did we receive a bill? We didn't. So on Monday, we will hopefully have the fourth bill from the Safe Teen Driving Task Force that we will be able to drop into the hopper for them so it can be up for consideration. We'll have to pass that and then get it right down to the secretary, because they got to be in by noon that day. That'll be the last day we can introduce bills. Is there anything else to come before the committee? If there is not, the chair will entertain a motion for adjournment. It's been moved by Senator Lucas. Is there a second?
Second
by Senator Krebs. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned. I got to sign some bills.